Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, Stone. And, you know, I was looking, today's the 1st of April, I was looking at our calendar, and we got a busy April. A lot of traveling going on.
We got a lot going on in April. I think we're hitting Dallas, Chicago, D.C. We're going to be on site in conference rooms. I think we may have a trade show worked in there somewhere. But we got a good crack staff here at home that's going to take care of our Atlanta-based folks. And we're going to learn a lot, catch up with some old friends, make some new ones. And it's going to be a lot of fun, but nothing compared to what we're going to do in the studio this morning. This is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Jack Daly. He's Regional Vice President of Sales for Bullseye Telecom. And we're going to talk to Arash Harzan. He's Managing Director with Forge. He's going to talk about the Health Innovation Challenge Hackathon. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the CEO, the boss, the grand poobah, and no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone. He was with Cabbage, maybe still with Cabbage. We'll get caught up on that. But he's also running Rhodey, Inc. Please join me in welcoming back to the studio Mr. Mark Gorlin. How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Rhodey, new venture here, huh?
It is. I like to hear you guys moving around a lot. You need to become Rhodey so you can take it to all these places you're doing your show.
Well, why don't you tell us about it? Make it worth our while. What is Rhodey? What are you guys up to?
Rhodey is actually letting people help one another out by taking stuff on places you're going anyway.
Okay.
So utilizing that excess capacity in passenger vehicles that are already going somewhere.
So I'm going to work every day, and then so what do I...
You're going to work every day, you're going on vacation, you're going to see your girlfriend in the mountains, you're the traveling sales guy that goes to all the same cities every week.
Right.
And it creates this transportation grid that's invisible, but everybody is on it. And it's instant, it's on demand. So we have mobile apps on iPhones and on Android you can download, and you can pick up a gig. A gig is sort of an homage to the real roadies of the road that actually transport instruments safely from town to town. And you can help somebody out, take a gig, you get paid for going where you're going anyway. We've got partnerships with people like Waffle House where you can get all sorts of benefits on the road. You're going to get free roadside assistance. You're going to save the environment because you're not going to have to box this stuff up and tape it and use all those packing peanuts. And at the end of the year, you're going to get to write off those miles on trips you were going to take anyway.
So walk me through an engagement, a gig. So I have some documents that I have to take downtown, and I know my next door neighbor goes downtown, or like what's a
well
gig?
Right now it's different than how it will be. Right now you look in the app and there's pins that are gigs. So you would say, oh, I got these documents. You take a picture of it. You say it needs to go today. You say where you are and where it needs to go to, and you post it to the Rhodey community. Your neighbor's like, well, I'm going that way anyway. They select the gig, offer to take it for you. You agree. And there's no money changes hands. They come pick it up, take it to where it needs to go. And it's that simple. And the story, actually, the whole idea for the business came from a real experience I had with a tile problem down in Perdido Key, Florida, which is pretty funny.
Okay, fire away.
Yeah, we'll be the judge of that.
Okay.
So you should never lead with it's pretty funny, because now we're judging this.
All right. They've got their paddles up. So I find we have a contractor that obviously didn't do a very good job at a condo and didn't put pans underneath the master bathroom showers down in Florida. So everybody finds this out because somebody's unit leaks, and I'm heading down there on a Thursday and having to pull it out and decide to make it a little nicer and put tile into the master bathroom shower. I get to Montgomery, have lunch, get back in my truck, and Glenn, the tile guy, calls me. And that's the call. I'm halfway there, and the call goes something like this. He's like, hey, Mark, that bullnose tile showed up broken as hell. Ain't going to be here till overnight delivery, which is on Monday. I'm like, Glenn, are you serious? First of all, overnight delivery is actually on Friday, not Monday. Right. But be that as it may, where's this tile? He said, well, I think it's in Birmingham. So I hang up the phone. I'm just pissed. I'm at the overpass of I-65 out of Montgomery. I look left, and I see all these cars going south. I look right, and I see all these cars going north. And it occurs to me that there's someone probably leaving Birmingham right now, heading to Montgomery. If I just knew who they were, surely they'd bring my box of tile down, give them $20. Hell, they're coming this way anyway. There's probably someone going all the way down to Pensacola, and I could be three Coronas in by the time they get there. And the truth is there's someone leaving everywhere, going everywhere all the time. And everybody generally wants to help each other. So the actual heat map already exists. So what Rhodey's doing is helping people tap into that to help each other out and get a little benefit for themselves as well.
Now, is the trust factor in this at all? Like, you're trusting that they're really going to do it in the time that they said they're going to do it?
Absolutely. I mean, the trust, I mean, that's the whole sharing economy, collaborative economy, right, whatever you want to call it. I mean, if I came to you 5 years ago, what would you say? I said, okay, I got this idea for you, Lee, where I want people to go and stay on your couch or in your house, and you may or may not be there. Cool?
Right.
So yeah, it's really important, and these communities police themselves. So the same thing you would see in eBay within badging and stars and ratings are within that. We collect licenses on all of the roadies coming in front and back and make sure they're valid in that state and that they're not expired. Get insurance information, their bank account information, because we have to pay them, what kind of car they have. We know more about a transaction of shipping something than any traditional package carrier on both sides, simply because it is a community as opposed to just a delivery app.
So now, what's your biggest challenge? Is it to get people to trust the system, or is it to get more people that are willing to be the roadie?
Probably getting, I mean, first of all, we've got to get enough roadies on there where there is serviceability within multiple geographies. So we started in the Southeast. We were at all the ACC, SEC football games last year. Collected nearly 115,000 people that raised their hand and gave us an email. There's 70,000 t-shirts and laundry baskets all over the Southeast right now with roadie on them. But I would, to answer your question directly, it's probably the sender side, because you've got to get, you know, it definitely takes away from traditional package carriers to some degree, but it also rips open a white space. I mean, if you want to send that heirloom crib to your sister before the baby comes, you might not want to bounce through four trucks in an airplane to get there.
Right.
And it's super heavy to ship. And it's also like, how do you package it? It's tough. You also run into issues like you want to send that 30-pound box of books. So if it's urgent, it needs to get to Birmingham in the next 3 hours, there is no option that makes sense right now. If it's oversized, out of the box, those sort of things, it doesn't make sense. Actually, one of our investors is UPS, and they told us this story before they invested, which was, guy walks into a UPS store with a 6-foot bird cage, which almost sounds like a joke. It should be like a rabbi, a priest, and a cowboy walks into a UPS store. And they said, we need to package this up. But they were thinking about how to palletize it and do all this stuff, when in reality, you just need a dude with a truck and bungee cords.
Right. And so that's where Rhodey comes in.
Absolutely.
You're the truck and bungee cords.
We're the truck and bungee cords, but we're also the Corolla. We're people that are going there anyway and helping a neighbor out.
Hey, I'm going to Pensacola Friday.
I am going on Saturday.
I grew up there.
Well, you know Perdido then. It's right down the road. I'll see you at the Floribam on Saturday.
You absolutely will. You most certainly will. So this has been embraced pretty well so far. It sounds like... But it must be a challenge, the sales and marketing of it. How do you market a service like that? Is it largely through social media?
You know, everybody like to think that everything is viral and we'll take all the viral luck we can get, but it's hard and you got to get out there. So we've, like I said, we had field events that before we even had NAP doing 300 events last year. We'll have over 700 this year. We've got... awesome young lady from Facebook that's running all the digital marketing efforts, everything social you could imagine we're out there doing. We're doing partnerships like the one we announced in February with Waffle House. You become a roadie, you get a free waffle immediately. And when you're on a gig and if you drop something at a Waffle House, which again, if you're not comfortable having someone come to your home, that's a safe, well-lit, free parking place where you can meet up. Waffle House is kind enough to give roadies a free beverage if they stop there to drop off their stuff. And there's going to be other fuel discounts and lodging discounts coming shortly in the app. So that those partnerships and I mean, those are basically the three ways that we're going
about it. That's a very creative idea. That's really sharp. And Waffle House is going to get theirs, because if I'm going to stop and get my free beverage, I'm probably going to get smothered and covered as well, as long as I'm there.
Absolutely.
Right?
When you think
everybody wins.
When you think about high tech and the digital economy and the sharing economy, you think waffles. I know I do.
Now, it's interesting. Share a little bit about how you were able to work with UPS, because you would think that Rhodey disrupts their business pretty good. So why'd they decide to kind of join the club instead of fight you guys?
Well, one, UPS is invested in past deals. Cabbage is a prior deal that I was co-founder of, and they've invested. But if you think about it, I sort of answer your question with a question. Don't you think a lot of transportation companies at this point wish they'd invested in Uber and Lyft to begin with? Mm. Don't you think a lot of hoteliers and lodging companies had invested in Airbnb when they got out there? It's not just disruptive to their business, but it also offers other service options. There's not a good one for that 6-foot birdcage, and there's a lot of other examples just like that that need to get there more urgently over longer distances or just oversized, and you know what they have to offer is just not going to make a lot of sense. So you know we're ripping open a white space beyond what they actually are able to ship within right now, and I think the guys at UPS are always investing in innovation, and they recognize that.
Well, I think it's a testament to your relationship with them, and it's a testament to them where they decided to take the risk with a startup that has this kind of idea. I mean, like you said, all those companies didn't invest in Airbnb and they didn't invest in Uber, and then they're kind of eating their lunch and their industry is disrupted.
You know, who would have thought that in 2015 that the largest taxi cab company in the world wouldn't own a single vehicle? And who'd have thought that a company booking hundreds of thousands of room nights per night wouldn't own a single property? So is it that much of a stretch to think that a major company in the shipping industry would not be reliant in 5 or 10 years on all those trucks, airplanes, and complex sorting centers that they are today?
Well, I think it is a stretch because a lot of the larger entities don't think that way. They think their way is the way, and that's how we've always done it. I mean, how often are these kind of things disrupted by the big dog in the industry?
It's hard. It's hard for the smart big companies know that, and that's why they invest in smaller companies. I saw an article about a month ago, I think it was on NPR, that that there's going to be 60% more trucks on the road by 2045. And that's competing with passenger vehicles that are out there.
Right.
So if you could lessen that reliance on freight trucks by utilizing the transportation grid that already exists, I mean, it's not only good for you and me and gets things there faster, cheaper, and friendlier, but it eases some of that congestion that's on the roadway with folks that are already there anyway.
Now, you guys launched in January of this year, is that right?
Yeah, we launched at the end of January.
So what was the first roadie gig?
The first roadie gig, well, we were doing gigs before we officially, before we launched. Yeah, we practiced. It was kind of cool. We went down to an RV show in Tampa, and I was down there, and we had a bunch of stuff. So we had an extra box of shirts or something that needed to come to Atlanta. So we set it up, and a guy down there was going back to Knoxville and decided to bring it up here, brought it up, met me, handed me the box, made $64 for driving on the way he was going anyway.
So now, how does it work, the compensation to the roadie?
It's a base fee plus some sort of mileage ticker depending on how far they go, but the payment is pretty simple. It's cashless. We hit the credit card of the sender, and the roadie, it gets sent right into their bank account, and the roadie driver keeps 80%, and Roadie Inc., the company, keeps 20%.
And then, so what would it be like somebody from the suburbs going into Atlanta with a box? Typically,
if it's 25 miles or under, you're not going to exceed $14. There's a lot of studies out there about what people will pay for same day shipping. We've got some good partners that have seen some of those studies.
Right.
And so you try to make it make sense within that. It doesn't make sense for everything. I mean, if I'm going to ship that coffee cup, you know, to Kentucky 2 days away and it's really light and small, we're not going to win on all those, and we're not trying to.
Right. So now, are roadies doing this like on a daily basis? How do you see them? Are they just coming in and out of the ecosystem?
Absolutely. We've got, we've been doing it for 8 weeks and we've had well over 40,000 downloads. We're pretty happy with that. And we've got gigs being launched every day. And the cool stat in Atlanta is that they're literally being offered on within an hour at this point in time.
Wow.
I mean, folks are monitoring this to see when things are there and when they might be going somewhere. And it's honestly with a pretty small subset of people just to get going. But it's very cool to see it happen. There was a surfboard that came up in LA the other week, and watching the comments and like, hey, I'm not going Thursday morning, I'm going Thursday afternoon, could I take it then? So people are working out. Too often you try to engineer too much of what you need to let people just figure out.
Right.
It's awesome to watch them figure it out within the app.
Comfortable with a little bit of the chaos and let the community work out the details, right? Just give them the platform.
Yeah, if you start companies, being comfortable with chaos is a core skill set.
Well, I'm really intrigued with this idea of the drop points, and I think Floribama should be a drop point. That makes perfect sense to me. But
don't think I'm not working on it. That's like my favorite bar in the world.
So talk to me a little bit about that. You're going to continue to try to cultivate more drop points, and what makes for a good drop point? Talk about that into the business a little bit.
Well, Rhodey is a community, and one of the reasons that Waffle House is so awesome is they're already a community. They're already taking the people. If you go to Waffle House 4 days in a row, they're going to know how you like your coffee on that fifth day because they know the people coming in. Mm-hmm. And there's all sorts of different people. I mean, there's folks that are coming after church with their families on Sunday. There's the retirees getting their second cup of coffee at 10 o'clock in the morning. And we all know why we're there at 3 a.m. But that community there, they are naturally already helping people. They sort of have that service mentality. So in that aspect, people that can want to help the Rhodey community, and obvious fuel discounts and lodging discounts are there, you know, but over time we'll have folks where you could do delayed drop, where you could leave a package somewhere and it would stay there. And then a Rhodey could come pick it, take it the rest of the way. If folks can't necessarily coordinate, meeting up at that exact time.
Oh, so then they could just do a leg of a trip.
That is possible in the future. It's not right now. Right now, you can't leave your stuff at the Waffle House. And unlike some of the phone calls that Waffle House has gotten, we are not delivering waffles from the Waffle House, as delicious as that would be.
And then, so a good candidate to be a roadie is somebody with a pickup truck?
A good candidate for somebody being a roadie is someone...
Anybody with a car?
Anybody with a car. I mean, and over time, I don't care if you're on the train, you're on a skateboard, you're on a boat, you're on a plane. I mean... Right now it's cars, but we'll be doing all sorts of cool stuff.
Cool. So what's next for you guys?
Continuing to build the community. We've got a lot of features we want to launch out, different kinds of things that you can ship you might not be thinking of that we're going to get out with. Some clever sort of stuff that we're going to work with the college students and their parents, which is sort of that. There's a lot of underground shipping lanes you don't think about that mm-hmm. we're starting to highlight where people could get things there much more simply than you know, driving to Athens and taking stuff when you know there's plenty of kids going back and forth all the time.
So any field events out in front of you? Going to go do like any kind of big party or get-together?
Well, we did our first roadie-only event at South by Southwest in Austin mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, and we had four bands, a rapper, and a DJ. I don't know quite how that happened, but it was great, and we had that biggest sign-up day in one day ever with people coming to it. We're going to do an event like that in Atlanta in the near future. We're going to be at a lot of the college football games, art festivals, concerts. We were at the race down at Atlanta Motor Speedway this time. We've done some of the other NASCAR races.
So it may be a hard act to follow, but the reason I'm asking, Lee, is I think it might be fun to do like a remote broadcast, like on site, and interview some roadies and stuff. If you have that community there in one place and talk to them, so it might be fun to cover an event. That's why I was asking. That might be a fun thing to do.
Come on out.
All right. Well, it is a delight to have you back in the studio, man. Just keep up the good work. I love what you're doing, and every time we talk, I just get so invigorated by the energy you and your team have. You guys are doing some fantastic work, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah.
So is this funner than cabbage?
Funner?
Look, they're totally different businesses.
Yeah, I wasn't looking to do any more financial services for a while. But no, they're just two different things. I think the best part is the starting part. It's probably the part that I'm best at. And it's creating something from nothing and getting it going, getting the money around it, getting the people around it, making people believe in something they certainly shouldn't believe in at the point at which they're required to believe in it to make it go. And I mean, Cabbage is an awesome business. We've helped so many small businesses right. out there actually grow when banks were just saying no. And Rhodey, you know, it's sort of overarching messages. It's folks helping each other out. I mean, I say that it's an authentically Southern idea. Yeah, I've taken Southern hospitality to the masses and using technology to actually bring people together versus in a lot of times you look at your bank app, it's trying to assure you never actually talk to a live human being. we're trying to bring people together right. in real places like Waffle House in the real world, and that's pretty cool.
All right, so let's make sure that we leave our listeners with coordinates because you can go out, download this app, learn more about this stuff.
Absolutely. Go to Google Play or iTunes Store and look for Rhodey App. It's a turquoise blue logo with an R on it. Download it and become a verified roadie or verified sender, and let us know what you think.
Well, again, congratulations on the early success and the momentum. We'll be watching, and you know, I may have to sign up for those Florida Bama runs anyway.
You're already going.
I'm already headed to the key.
What are you talking about? You're buying me a Bushwhacker this weekend.
All right. Listen, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our
guests? I'd love to.
Okie doke. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Managing Director with Forge, Mr. Arash Harzan. How you doing, man? You learn anything in that last broadcast?
Yeah, that was really exciting, and that sounds really awesome. I think I can sort of empathize with the excitement of sort of starting something from nothing, and I think that's really kind of what drives, you know, the American economy, what kind of drives our communities forward. But thank you all for having me. I'm excited to be here. It's my first time on the radio, so it's kind of interesting. So I'm just glad to be here.
Have you gotten used to hearing your own voice yet in the headphones, or we're still working through that?
It sounds a little weird. I'm one of those people that when I hear my voice after I record it, it doesn't sound like me, but at least in this case, it still sounds like it's myself on the, you know, into the headphones.
Well, you're already better than Lee, so you're doing fantastic.
You're
doing
winning. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Forge and Forge Health?
Well, so Forge, what we're trying to do, our sole purpose is to really support healthcare entrepreneurship. We do that by connecting some of the stakeholders that make that happen. So startup founders, engineers, clinicians, scientists. And we do that by currently a series of public events. So we host networking salons, which are get-togethers that bring together thought leaders, experts to give panel discussions, talks, really as a way of getting the entire network, as a way of getting the entire ecosystem to come together, meet, collaborate. We hold every quarter, we hold a boot camp, which is really an educational program designed to teach business and technical skills to startup founders in healthcare. And then our sort of marquee event, or what's becoming our marquee event, is our annual Health Innovation Challenge, which we're hosting next weekend, April 10th through 12th. At the Atlanta VA.
And you're kind of like the roadie of health. Is that how you would characterize it?
I don't know if I go that far. But we look at ourselves as sort of as a vehicle. A lot of it's sort of based on our background. So I'm from the healthcare side. I'm a clinician. I describe myself as a indentured healthcare servant, which otherwise known as a resident. So I'm at Emory University and I'm an aspiring cardiologist. But one thing that we realized early on, for some of us who are always looking for different ways to improve, you know, how we deliver healthcare, is that some of the people that feel some of those pain points in healthcare, mm-hmm. Things that don't work very well,
right.
You know, whether it's, you know, it could be anything. I mean, it could be delivering test results to your patients or, you know, a basic process. You know, what we realize is that some of those people that feel those issues really aren't best equipped to actually solve them and build a solution around them, you know, meaning engineers. So, you know, our initial goal was really just to get engineers and clinicians talking to each other, and, you know, see what happens. You know, maybe you might get something cool to come out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what this has kind of evolved out from.
So that's the Health Innovation Challenge.
So the Health Innovation Challenge is probably the purest and most direct way that we do that. And so the way it works is, it's basically our annual healthcare hackathon. And so it's really a 36-hour health innovation sprint. And what we do is we take over, you know, a facility. In this case, we've taken over the VA next weekend, and they've been very nice to have us. We bring together a couple hundred, some of those key stakeholders, the engineers, the clinicians, scientists, designers, business folks.
And you just lock them in a room and for 36 hours until something good comes out?
Well, we're not that mean, but what we do is we have them come together and actually, so the event goes through a couple of phases. So it kicks off on Friday night, we have some of the participants come together and pitch some of those pain points to each other and get each other riled up about, you know, things that they want to work on.
So the pitcher can be either an engineer or a clinician?
It could be anybody. Who has
idea.
It could be, and what we really kind of focus on is patients. We want to get, you know, I think one thing we don't do a very good job in healthcare innovation is, you know, we don't really focus on the true end customer, which is really the patients. And the funny thing is everyone's a patient. You know, everyone, whether if you're a doctor or an engineer, you've been a patient at some point in your life.
Sure.
It's really anybody that has an idea that has something.
That can serve a patient better. So that's like the theme is we're trying to improve the patient experience?
Exactly. And that takes, you know, a bunch of different forms. It could be, you know, something that's truly sort of, you know, on the consumer side. It could be something that's more on the hospital side. But really, mm-hmm. you know, we stay agnostic. And, you know, if you can form a team, if you can get others excited about kind of working with you through the event to help build a solution to fix that problem, you know, then so be it. And we support you. So it's 36 hours. You know, we'll have people there overnight, you know, sleeping at the VA.
Right. It's 36 hours in a row.
In a row.
It's not like, you know, 4 hours at a time for 9 days.
No, it's not. And I mean, some people do go home and come back the next morning, but the majority of the people that come, which are primarily engineering students, you know, this is sort of part of their culture. I
mean, the first time you've done this? Or
this is our second. We had our first one last August at Georgia Tech. It was about 100 folks. It was a very big regional event. We had a great success. And we're sort of coming off that And through a series of serendipitous events, decided to have this year's event at the VA, which is where I'm spending my year. And we're actually working with some other folks at the national office. But, you know, we thought it'd be really cool to sort of, you know, really collide two almost, when you think of healthcare innovation, a lot of people don't think of the VA as sort of like the, you know, like the center of that, which is actually not true. I mean, the VA does invest a lot of time and energy in trying to find ways of improving the way they deliver care to the veterans. But we thought it'd be cool to sort of bring these two worlds together. And the VA has been very receptive and very supportive. The Undersecretary for Health, Carolyn Clancy, is going to be flying down to be our opening keynote speaker.
That's great.
Yeah, and we have a lot of sort of national support from the VA National, the Atlanta VA, which
is
where we're
hosting
it.
Is this the first time a VA in the country has done something like
this? This is the first quote-unquote healthcare hackathon. and I have to put it in quotes only because the very first thing the VA told me when we talked to them was, you can't host a hackathon on a federal...
government property,
yeah, exactly.
Right? That's so probably not a good idea.
But this is the first such event we're hosting that's being hosted in a VA nationwide, and there'll be a few more throughout the year that we're not a part of, but there will be hopefully, this hopefully will be like the first in a series of such events across the VA.
Now, at the end of the 36 hours, what's the expectation of an outcome? Are they supposed to have something that's kind of a prototype? Is it still an idea on a napkin? Like, what do you want to, what do you get at the end of the 36 hours?
So you know, to hack something means to build. So, you know, they get judged on what they've built during the weekend. We have a demo session on Sunday afternoon. We have a panel of very, you know, esteemed judges that we've been able to bring together. And each team gets 3 minutes to pitch their idea, to pitch their solution, and then convince the panel, you know, why theirs is sort of the best solution to address the pain point that they were working on.
Right.
For this year, we're adding another layer, you know, which is sort of that veteran centricity. We'll have the some folks from the VA itself on the judging panel to sort of judge how well that solution also addresses, you know, the needs from
a challenge that the VA is having.
Exactly.
Specifically.
Exactly.
Now, you're personally a practitioner.
Of sorts, correct. I'm still in training, so I can't really...
Okay, but so do you have a dream category or a product or a service or something that you feel like would make your life easier, and you're sort of, you got your fingers crossed that some of these bright folks at this hackathon or some of the future ones will come up with a way to solve a problem or two?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about most physicians is that, you know, there's never just one. You know, I mean, you can, you know, if you want to get a doctor talking for, you know, for hours, ask him, hey, what's wrong with the healthcare system? Mm-hmm. You know, and they'll go on for hours. But, you know, sort of my own personal interest really is, you know, a specific disease called heart failure. And one thing that we're, you know, that I'm very passionate about is finding ways to sort of better educate patients to manage their own disease, to sort of give them tools and resources to help them sort of navigate the healthcare system and make better choices for themselves. And it's very simple things, you know, sort of, you know, why take your medications, how to take your medications, where to get your medications from, how to get in touch with your doctor. And we're seeing a lot of that in healthcare innovation. We're seeing a lot more sort of the patient side, consumer side applications that sort of empower patients to kind of take their health in their own hands. And that's something that I'm personally very passionate about. So it remains to be seen if I'll get up there and make a pitch myself. I've had a lot of sleepless nights planning this event, so I don't really want to stay awake for the event itself. But we'll see how it goes.
Well, if I know Mark, he's invented something during this 10-minute segment already. I mean, I can just see his wheels turning. Don't you think this is an exciting field, Mark?
I absolutely do. My brother is an ankle and foot surgeon. We were just talking the other day about now. And he is required to tell people about weight, tell people about to quit smoking. So there's all sorts of things they're trying to put on the doctors to make sure they're telling the patients to take care of themselves. So any innovations in that area that you're talking about are going to be huge, because that's how doctors are going to get paid going forward.
No, absolutely. I think we're seeing a lot more sort of like value reimbursed care, value based care, and I think that's, you know, it's sort of a double edged sword to most physicians, because, you know, a lot of it ends up becoming you get 15 minutes to see a patient these days, and so, you know, part of the problem is, well, you have, in those 15 minutes you have to do, you know, you have to talk to the patient, examine the patient, diagnose the patient, give them a plan, and then also address all these other sort of checklists that people want you to address that are actually important in a lot of ways. So I think one of the One of the sort of big challenges we're going to see that maybe technology has a role in sort of supporting and helping sort of fix is, you know, how do we address some of these other very important issues, you know, in a very efficient manner that gives, you know, that really maximizes that 15-20 minute visit. And that's, I think, one area that we can see a lot of innovation in.
Do you think healthcare is back where sort of like the technology is like the bank is trying to push you out of actually seeing the doctor? Because I know my brother-in-law told me that now they spend way too much time in front of the computer screen as opposed to talking to the consumers. Do you think the technology needs to keep moving to where it can actually bring them more time together?
Yeah, I think, you know, specifically talking about like electronic medical records, which was, you know, sort of this, you know, people were talking about it's going to be the end all be all, you know, panacea for all the all major issues in healthcare. And, you know, it's had a lot of success, but I think that's one of the big issues is that, you know, when I'm seeing a patient now, I spend, you know, I'm not looking at the patient, I'm looking at the computer screen the entire time, you know, because I have to find a way of, you know, talking to them, documenting everything that they're telling me. So I think, you know, it remains to be seen sort of where that's going to go. We're seeing a lot of new innovations within the sort of EMR sphere. And in terms of, you know, finding new and intuitive ways to document, you know, while you're talking to a patient, iPad apps and things like that. But I kind of, you know, not as a physician, you know, I and I think most physicians would agree is that, you know, it's not the technology that's really, you know, driving the quality of care. It's really the clinicians, the physicians, the people in healthcare. And we think technology is a very important adjunct to that, sort of extends us to a certain degree. And it plays a very important role. But, you know, I think the focus will always sort of be on the people, and not just the physicians, the nurses, the nurse practitioners, and the patients themselves. And I think, you know, the best thing technology can do is sort of, you know, support that interaction, those interactions between all those key people in healthcare, and really make it as efficient, as valuable, as safe and as effective as it can be.
Yeah, I think one of the traps is that just because you can make a cool thing, that's not helping the outcome for the patient. It's still just a cool thing.
Right, and which is why, you know, at the Health Innovation Challenge, we really kind of focus on the problem. You know, we start off with the pitches. We say, you know, it happens in two rounds, but round one is focusing on, you know, what is the problem that you want people to focus on?
Right.
Because you're right. I think a lot of times people just want to build something for the sake of building something. And it really doesn't address a problem. It's just more, you know, of a parade. And so I think that's one thing that we focus on. We say, you know, round one, you know, what is the problem that you guys are perceiving in healthcare? And let's really kind of define that problem. You know, how severe is that problem? Who does it really affect? And then round two is, all right, what's a solution to that problem? Mm-hmm. And then that's when sort of the teams form. And then that's how they'll be judged at the event, during the demos is, you know, what was a problem you're trying to fix? Why was it a problem? And then what have you done? What have you built over the weekend that may address this problem in the long term?
Now, did anything come out of the first hackathon? Did you guys come up with anything that's actually moved forward out of this idea stage into actual products?
Actual products, not yet.
Or it's on the path to being an actual product?
Yeah, so it was interesting. Yesterday I was at the, which is still ongoing, which is the Southeastern Medical Device Association is having their annual meeting. SEMDA is having their meeting. And I was at the event yesterday and I was walking around looking at some of the posters. And there was a company that was, their poster title was, you know, I forget how they phrase it, but it was along the lines of a foot paddle controlled video game to prevent clots in children and their legs. And I'm like, this sounds really similar to one of the teams at the hackathon last year. And lo and behold, it was actually the same team. It was they formed a company called Footsie, that's exactly what they made. One of the problems that we had last year that teams were working on was this issue of, you know, deep venous thrombosis, clots that form in, you know, in patients' legs when they're laying in the hospital. Because, mm-hmm. you know, when you're laying and blood is pooling, you know, that's one risk factor for forming blood clots. And those clots can travel into your lungs and cause part of your lung to die off. And it can be, you know, a very fatal thing. And so we were focusing on children. And this team, you know, came up with a really cool idea, which was, well, you know, kids love playing video games. We want to get them to move their feet. So why not make a video game that they use with their feet?
It requires them to move their feet.
Exactly. And, you know, and so I know that they're still working. Obviously, you know, they're having some success. You know, we did, as part of the prize package that we give away through our partners a free patent filing to the winners. Mm-hmm. And so the two patent filings that we gave away last year were both filed just recently. You know, one team developed one of our big pain points last year was through a nonprofit that we work with called Talk With Me Baby. And they were working on this sort of focus as an institution is trying to solve the 30 million word gap that children, impoverished children, sort of suffer from relative to their more affluent counterparts. And they've sort of linked that that word gap to a bunch of disparities as those kids get older. And you know, they sponsored a pain point last year, and more teams worked on that pain point than anything else. And
wow.
The winning team last year was a group called Chatterbox, and they actually came up with a very, which is sort of ironic, they came up with a very low-tech solution to, you know, what was supposed to be a very high-tech event.
Right.
But what they came up with was putting, you know,
A pad of paper and a pencil.
it was actually something along those lines. They put short stories on diapers. And they figured, you know, parents are changing their kids' diapers every
single
day.
So they can read them.
So they can, you know, at least prompt them to read, you know, stories to their children. And that was the winning team last year. And they just recently filed a patent. And the runner-up was actually a group called Quid. And they were working on finding a solution to identify, retain surgical objects after surgery. That's, you know, which is sometimes an issue. And I'm not a surgeon, so I can't speak to this. But, you know, an issue in surgery is that sometimes, you know, things get left inside the patient. It's very rare, but when it happens, you know, they like to make sure they get it out. And so they came up with a really cool sort of sensor that would sort of, you know, scan the patient by hand and, you know, identify that, you know, if there was a retained needle or something, you know, that's left inside the patient after you've kind of sewed them up.
Right.
And they were the runner-up, and they just also filed their patent. So, I mean, they're working. And, you know, a lot of these groups that were working on devices, I mean, that life cycle is very long. Mm-hmm. And so... you know, we're kind of excited to see where they go. We're excited to see what kind of teams pop up out of this event. We're working with a group called Hacking Medicine out of MIT who hosts these healthcare hackathons, you know, throughout the year. They've done 20 of them. They've had some very big success companies come out of their events. One of them is a company called PillPack that has gone on to raise about $12 million in funding from some big VC firms like Accel Partners. And what this one company does is they've sort of, you know, made a very digital solution to the pharmacy. So they will manage every aspect of, you know, all the medications you're on. They'll manage your refills. They'll make sure you get your medication sent to you on time, and they do all, you know, through like a web-based, you know, application, and they have a smartphone app as well. And that team launched out of one of Hacking Medicine's hackathons, and they're still working and growing, and they have a product that they're serving, and they've raised venture capital funding, and so they've done very well. So, you know, there is a there was a very strong history of, you know, actual companies coming out of these hackathons. So I think it's exciting to see where it goes.
Now, for you working in the ecosystem of Atlanta and the healthcare IT, obviously we do a good job in healthcare IT. Are you finding this a good ecosystem for Forge?
We are. One of the issues that, you know, we've been trying to solve as a group is sort of, you know, in Atlanta, you find, you know, a lot of great resources. And I think the health IT apparatus here is, you know, fantastic. Companies like McKesson and Philips, IBM, Intel all have big offices here. Emory University, Georgia Tech.
It seems like there's a lot of now healthcare accelerators and incubators going on. I mean, we recently had the NeuroLaunch folks in here, which is kind of a unique accelerator for neuroscience. Are you finding it helpful? Is there a lot of like-minded people that are trying to make things happen in this space?
There are, and we've had a lot of support. And one thing we've been trying to do is sort of, you know, we have all these great resources, but, you know, a lot of them are very much siloed off, within each other. And academia is kind of the biggest culprit of that, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, Emory doesn't really like to break down their walls for a lot of people. And so, you know, we found a lot of support there once we're able to get people talking to each other.
Right.
And that's been sort of like the biggest challenge, is saying, well, you guys are doing this great thing, and these other guys also want to do, you know, something similar to that. Why don't y'all talk to each other? You know, it might just make some sense. How about that? You know,
That community. It's coming back to that community.
But that's really kind of what we're after, building that ecosystem, that community, to get people talking to each other, working with each other.
And that's what your mission at Forge is, right?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're sort of focusing on. You know, we have some other big events planned for the for down the road. We're working on a big sort of startup showcase for healthcare companies towards the end of 2015. And so, you know, we have some big things planned that we're trying to work on. But this right now sort of is our focus. The Health Innovation Challenge is really kind of what we're...
When is this shindig, this one coming up?
So this shindig happens next weekend. It's April 10th through 12th at the Atlanta VA on Claremont Road. If you're interested, anyone who's listening, you can go to challenge.forgehealth.org and learn more and sign up.
So there's still time to sign up?
There's still time to sign up. The applications close this Saturday. There's still room, and we have a few spots left. So, feel free to sign up. We'd love to have you. Go to the website. You can always learn more. Contact us. And
all right. So this event or future events, are there sponsor opportunities? Are you sometimes sponsored? Funded? Have you gone down that path at all?
We are heavily sponsor funded.
Do you need Lee Cantor pockets or just a normal guy?
I'll just go to Cabbage and get it.
Yeah, go to Cabbage, get what you need. Exactly. Have the money roadied down there.
A briefcase of cash.
It's all coming together, Mark.
We're building our own community right here in the studio.
Meet you under a bridge.
All right, but no, so you are heavily sponsored. So those are conversations. I mean, it might be a little late in the game on this one, maybe not, but you want to have those conversations. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, we definitely do rely on sponsors. We have some great ones for the event next weekend. Some of the big ones are Delta Airlines came on board to offer
us. Oh, I've heard of them.
They're a small little niche airline. Right. But they partner with us to offer travel scholarships. So one thing we did this year is, we made this a very national event. So we're, flying people in from Canada, from Texas, from California who want to be part of the event. And we're able to do that with the help of Delta. Obviously, Emory and Georgia Tech are big sponsors. Gwinnett Medical Center just came on board. So, I mean, the hackathon really is our sort of marquee event. It's very expensive. So, we're very grateful to have some great sponsor support. And we're always looking to bring on new corporate, nonprofit, academic sponsors of all kinds. So, our website, forgehealth.org, has information if you guys want to, hop on board and talk to us about how we can sort of, work together. And that's what we're looking for. I mean, we're excited to work with really anybody, if it's a company, if it's a nonprofit, it's a university, it's, really, if you have an interest in healthcare innovation and, you want to sort of, connect with others that might have a similar interest, give us a call.
Good stuff. Well, thank you.
No, thank you guys very much.
Hey, listen, we got one more guest we're going to visit with. You going to hang with us for a little bit?
Absolutely.
All right, Lee, are you ready for the headliner?
That's right, the closer.
This is the headliner?
You're the headliner, buddy.
So we have with us from Bullseye Telecom, Regional Vice President of Sales, because we all know nothing really happens till you make a sale. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Jack Daly. How you doing over there, man?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys having me in here.
Well, you've been very patient, very engaged. I thought I caught you taking some notes, but I know I saw you nodding your head a lot, and I suspect you may have come away from this learning a thing or two already.
It's been an enlightening experience. I've got my notes to get the Rohde app, and certainly listening to what's happening in medicine. I think whether it's concierge medicine or remote medicine being served to patients, there's a lot of exciting things happening in that space. So it was good to be sitting in here listening to it all.
So let's talk about you and Bullseye. What are you guys doing for folks?
Bullseye Telecom is an Inc. 500 full-service telecommunications carrier that provides a portfolio of services that's very broad to small to mid-sized businesses all the way up to Fortune 500 companies.
And you're based here in Atlanta?
We are actually based in the Motor City, Detroit.
Uh-huh.
We've expanded into
Atlanta.
We've expanded into Atlanta. Within the last 6 months, we've gone into markets in Houston, Dallas, and Atlanta, strategically because those are markets where we have great aggregate relationships with providers to provide good services to customers.
So when you open an office in Atlanta, so what does that entail? Is that just sales or there's operations happening?
It's sales.
There?
Yeah, all operations is run from Detroit. You get much better continuity when you keep your operational teams localized to corporate. But what we do put on the ground is engineers and field service people that will help with installations for customers in the local marketplaces. But the predominance of the offices like in Atlanta are sales driven.
And then what is the sweet spot for you in terms of customers? Do you have a specialty?
Well, it's interesting. Bullseye really made its mark in the industry by providing service to...
Archers?
Sometimes people are confused. The logo looks a little bit like Targets as well, right. So there's some confusion there. Providing services to multi-location Fortune 1000 type companies.
Mm-hmm.
And the play on that was that we have, we're kind of what you would call a hybrid competitive local exchange carrier and aggregator. So we've got aggregate relationships across the U.S. So we can go into these large corporations that have multiple locations and provide service at every single location. So as an operator, you know, whether you be COO or CFO, there's huge value there.
Right.
Because rather than,
it's,
you know,
it's one call to make.
It's one call to make. It's one vendor. You know, typically you're getting hundreds of bills. You know, you're dealing with multiple touch points. And now Bullseye has the capacity to go in there and serve that up to you all on one invoice, one provider, one touch point. Now, what we look to do in these markets, Houston, Dallas, and Atlanta, is really focus on the small to mid-sized business, driving those same type of boutique services, and then work all the way up to those corporate advantage or Fortune 1000 type customers. So
now, when a customer or potential customer is using multiple vendors, how do they deal with the security aspect of this, and how do you guys help them?
That's another factor. I mean, one of the things that Bullseye does a great job as well is providing, you know, what we would call managed services. And now in the environment of moving to a hosted or cloud-based type service,
right,
it gives you a lot of fail-safe disaster recovery. You know, we do a great job with what they call PCI compliance for retailers, to where we can ensure that their credit card activity is protected going through the internet. So there's the solutions are vast, and it really depends on what the particular end user is trying to accomplish.
Now, do you work in healthcare at all? Because I would imagine they have even more needs
than anybody else,
especially like
with
you
HIPAA,
were saying about telemedicine. If they're trying to
Absolutely. I would say from a medical perspective, where we've had a lot of success has been with physicians' offices or dentist offices or, let's say chiropractors, anyone where you're where you've got patient assets that you need to safeguard, as well as communicate at the same time, our services can converge, bring that together.
Now, we had recently somebody in that was working in telemedicine, and she was here in Atlanta, and she was helping serve, she's OBGYN, she was helping a woman in like South Georgia.
Yes.
Like via video.
Yes.
Now, is that an area that you can help as well?
Fully supported through our solutions. The unique thing about Bullseye, what really puts us in a unique spot, is that we can go in from a standpoint of not only providing the hardware, but the back end bandwidth. So it can be a all-encompassing solution for the customer, all the way from the front end gear that they would use to make a call back to the bandwidth that's provided on the back end.
But in like healthcare, don't they need a level of service that is well more than I need at my house to watch Netflix?
Yes.
You know, like they can't have buffering.
No,
I don't want to see an hourglass going when I'm looking at.
Yeah, you see the timer come up on the screen.
Right.
Yeah, no, they may need a more sophisticated type of bandwidth.
Right.
And again, the solutions can all be customized to what that customer's needs are. And then there are, you know, devices and equipment that sit on the network to monitor that traffic, provide alerts to customers if there's, you know, any issues, and maintain a safe environment that protects the records.
I don't want to intimidate you, Jack, if you do decide to call on this lady that Lee is talking about, but just to give you a little context on her, she was like an aerospace engineer, rocket scientist for NASA, and then decided, you know, that was fun, but I'm going to do my next thing. So now I'm going to become a high-risk OBGYN.
Well, you know,
so pretty smart gal.
Yeah, I like that.
Can you believe that?
For the 20 years of my career, I like the tough prospect, and like being in this room today, I've learned a few things. So I consider myself a lifelong learner, so I'm more than happy. We'll take any lead, let's put it that way.
But how does the sales and marketing process work for you guys? Because I get the sense that you don't call people up out of the blue and say, hey, would you like to explore some ideas for your telecom needs, or is that how it's still done?
That's a great question.
That was fantastic. It took me a little minute to get it out.
That was good. I like
fantastic.
That.
Question.
That seems like it was pre-prepared. But you know, one of the things with Bullseye is that the growth of the company, we're uniquely positioned in the fact that we've been around for 15 years, right? So we're at a stage right now where we're self-funded, but we're in a high growth phase right now. So because of the way the industry has evolved, our initial model had us selling these corporate advantage or Fortune 1000 type customers all out of Detroit, which we still do today. So our sales reps would actually travel, which they still do, to customer sites, you know, whether it be Portland, Oregon, Portland, Maine, or Las Vegas. Possibly using roadie services, which might be a good application because our guys do travel, and sit down and sell those customers on-prem, you know, traveling into the city.
Mm-hmm.
With the new model that we have right now that we're, let's call it our emerging market model, which is, again, Atlanta, Dallas, and Houston, we're actually putting boots on the ground, physical reps that'll go out, suit and tie, go in and sit down with that small to mid-sized business customer and propose a solution that's boutique and driven exactly to what their particular needs are. So it really is, it is old school meets new school because it's new technology, but it's an old school approach. You know, we go out and we do face-to-face prospecting, telemarketing, and really go out and drive business the old-fashioned way.
Well, it sounds like that you're a very relationship-driven business, that you believe in that kind of at the core philosophically.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the thing about Bullseye is that we provide such a customized solution for these customers. But the one of the key differentiators, other than the fact that the solution is customized, is the service is second to none. So it's customer facing, it's one-on-one, consult with the business, figure out what their needs are, and then, you know, recommend an appropriate solution that's gonna help their organization. And taking that one step further from a customer service perspective, we just simply do stuff that other companies won't do or can't do. You call into our customer service number at any time of day, the phone is answered by a live body inside of 30 seconds each and every time. Now, we're not a residential provider, but all of us in this room probably have broadband or some type of service at our house. Without naming any company names, if you have an issue at your home and you have to call into customer service, we all know what that experience is
That's right.
You better set aside 45 minutes of your evening, right? So you don't have time for that as a consumer, but as a business, there's no way you can let that happen, right? So Bullseye, where we really beat up on our competitors is simply because we provide the type of service that if you have any questions or concerns, you call into that number 24 hours a day, live person answers it inside of 30 seconds that can address your issue.
Now, what is the pain that a potential customer is having that would have them call you? Like, is this something that they call you when something screwed up by their previous provider, or you're able to move them to open their mind that this is something worth considering, even though they might think they're being satisfied by their existing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think
that was a really good question. That wasn't just a good question.
Okay, 2-1.
Well, because I don't think everybody wakes up one day and says, you know what, I need a new phone system today, right?
Right. So, I mean, there's a hassle factor of switching, right? There's some pain.
Well, yes, and we take out the hassle and confusion, as one of our sales trainers would say, right? So we take the hassle and confusion out of your telecom. So we make that process easy. But, you know, a lot of times if you're sitting back with a business right now and you've got an antiquated phone system, which is a lot of the businesses out there, you know, you're typically, you get an employee that is new or leaves, you can't find the manual to get into the phone system, to switch the extensions, and you have to call your technician. Yeah. The technician comes out. You know, then you get a $200 bill for somebody that added two new. It's mind blowing, right? So, by having these new type of systems that are available, these hosted PBX cloud based systems, we can come in for these customers, and with absolutely no capital expenditure at all, they can get a brand new phone system that's all cloud based. It's got, you know, disaster recovery built into it, and they don't have to pay any out of pocket capital. So, From the perspective of your question, customers don't always wake up one day and realize they need this. So we as an organization really have to drive that engagement with prospects by
education, right?
And educating the marketplace, getting in front of them, sitting down. And we work hard to get the appointments. But once we get the appointments, it typically, you know, the solution kind of speaks for itself.
So now, but what is that pain they're having? So they may not be having any pain.
Their pain may be too much cost. It may be inefficiencies within the business. You know, a lot of times, like a simple example will be, we'll call on a company that'll have, let's say, 5 locations in a warehouse, and they can't transfer calls in between those locations. Mm-hmm. So a pain point is every time somebody calls and you need to get a hold of the other location, you can't live transfer that call over to that
warehouse.
Right,
you got to hang up.
Yeah, you got to hang up and dial. So some of it, you know, you enlighten them with, hey, I didn't realize
that I could even do
that
this.
I could do this, and I didn't realize what I had was an issue. Other times they say, yeah, this is a headache. Help me solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all this conversation about net neutrality, is that impacting your world at all? You got to take on that, or are you staying intentionally distant from the conversation? What's the smart way to approach that?
Well, it's interesting. It's a question that doesn't come up much in the field, but I think it's a hot, you know, maybe round the water cooler type topic. But the basic concept is simply that you've got, you know, these broadband providers, the thought process being that they would somehow throttle or make faster slow lanes on the internet for people utilizing their services. right? So the FCC has ruled that they're not going to allow that, meaning the internet will continue to be open. And the only reason the big providers would want to have any type of throttling would be for profit, obviously, right? So they would charge you more to get your data through quicker. So for us as a provider that's an up-and-comer, the fact that the ruling is that the net will stay neutral and that it's wide open is to our advantage. And I think it's to the consumer's advantage as well.
Mm-hmm. So now, what's next for you? How are you attacking the Atlanta market?
We are growing at a breakneck pace, and again, it's unique in the sense that we've got a company that's got a 15-year history, but we're still in a startup mode. So we have resources to really grow quickly. So our plan is to expand aggressively through 15 and 16. And specifically in the Southeast, we'll be going after markets that would be the classic suspects you would think. You know, we're looking at Raleigh, we're looking at Charlotte, we're looking at Birmingham, Nashville, those type of cities.
So while you're based here in Atlanta, you're looking at the outlying area as well?
Looking at the outlying areas because again, these aggregate relationships we have with carriers to provide services are especially strong for us in the Southeast and Southwest. That's why we'll expand through a good portion of Texas. We're looking at markets there like San Antonio, Austin, et cetera.
Good stuff. Exciting times for you guys, huh?
Oh, it is. And I was once with the company back 15 years ago in the very beginning when it was Detroit based. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get my family to move to the Motor City. Yeah. So
you were here in Atlanta?
No, I was here in Atlanta. I had worked with a number of the executives at the company. So mm-hmm. So I was part of that startup team that built the company out of the gate. After about a year and a half, the company stayed Detroit specific.
Right.
I came back to Atlanta.
So you were doing something else?
Yeah, I did a number of things in private equity and venture capital, but I always stayed close to these executives. And then they came back to me with an opportunity to say, hey, we want to expand the business, but based on where we're at today, you could stay in Atlanta and grow it for us from here. So I was thrilled to come back. And,
see, that never burn any bridges, right? That's a good lesson for everybody.
This is a lesson to be learned for anyone, right? Yeah, I believe that, you know, that you leave all relationships in a positive way, right? Because
right.
You never know
you
when
never
it,
know. 15 you never know, years later, you never know when call
comes,
you back
you
up.
You never know when it comes back or you get called back out of the dugout. So
that is good stuff. So if somebody wanted to learn more, website for you guys?
It's bullseyetelecom.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Guys, I appreciate you having me in here. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.